This is Bob Sorrentino from Italian Roots and Genealogy, and I'm here today with Bob Semenza, who's been researching his family and also has written a book, a couple of books actually, but one specific one about his growing up as an Italian American. So welcome, Bob. Thanks for being here.
Okay. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm really looking forward to this.
Great, great. So I want to start with your Italian families and your research. So were both your parents Italian?
Yes. Yeah. My father was born here, but my mother was born in Italy, in Calitri. Yeah.
Oh, okay. And where is that?
That's over in Avellino, over, you know, near Naples and all. Both my families are from that area. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she came over when she was about 6 years old, so.
And what year was that?
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. You got me in the early 1900s sometime.
Yeah. And, you know, my dad's family is from Naples. And my going back several hundred years, my ninth great-grandfather was the Prince of Avellino.
Ah, oh, really? Okay. Yes. Yeah, I think I heard that in some of your prior podcasts that I've been listening to. That's interesting.
And both my families came, both my parents were born here, but both my families came over around the same time, about 1915.
Mm-hmm. Okay. My grandfather came over in 1888, around there, before he actually landed at Castle Gardens, I guess, before they started Ellis Island. So, but I'll get into that.
That's really neat. Yeah, I haven't talked to anybody who's come through Castle Gardens. That's a long time.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. So with that, do you know why they came to America?
I can only guess it was poverty. I mean, they were, you know, uneducated, and things were rough over there, as you know, during those years and all, when there were, you know, many, many Italians that came over during that period. So, I mean, I unfortunately know nothing about their life over there, and I'll get into that and my frustrations with trying to trace my family history back.
So why don't we do that? Why don't we start with your paternal family and, you know, where they come from and what you found out about them.
All right. I really started to get into this because I always doubted our family name. I never thought our name was really Semenza, S-E-M-E-N-Z-A. You know, I met a lot of Semenzas over the years, but they were never related to me. So I really wanted to go back and find out more about my family history. But first of all, I had to get the name right. So, and I also planned to go over to Italy to visit some of the places where my descendants were from. So I felt I had to learn Italian. So, you know, a number of years ago, I took a number of adult education courses, took a lot of online aids and all, read a lot of books and all, and tried to learn Italian, which I still have not been very successful at. But anyway, I knew very little about my family. You know, about all I knew was my father would say they were from Avellino, you know, but Avellino is a big place. You know, we're in Avellino. You know, he never mentioned the town where they're from. You know, I knew that he always said he was born in Little Italy, which I couldn't quite understand because I knew he was raised in Tuckahoe, New York, in Westchester. Mm-hmm. And the only other thing I had to go on was at one of the family picnics, I had gotten one of my aunts, I believe, to write down a rudimentary family tree. And she did it on the side of one of these big, you know, these brown grocery bags that she used to get in the grocery store. In fact, if you go to Arthur Avenue now, they still have those bags, and they still, in some of the stores, they'll write down everything you want and they'll add it all up in their heads, you know. So I had that old bag, you know, and I had a couple of handwritten notes, and you know that was about it, you know. And you know, my father said he was born a Little Italy, and he always mentioned the Ferrara family, you know, the famous bakery there on Mulberry Street. And
yes.
My mother, and he would say that they would cater at their wedding and they were friendly with the family. But, you know, we also knew that they met on a trolley. You know, my father was a conductor on the trolleys that used to run back and forth between where I was born in Neuchâtel and Mount Vernon. And we know they met on a trolley. He was went into the First World War, but the night before his unit was shipped out, he sneaked off the base. He was at Sports Locum in near Glen Island, near Rochelle, you know, very close to home. He sneaked off the base to go on a date with my mom and went AWOL. So when he got back, he was thrown in the brig and his unit shipped out, and that was that. So that was about all we knew, you know. So I decided, well, let me start, you know, trying to find out more about the family, figure out what their name was. So I had this brown paper bag, you know, that was about it. But it also had some notes. And on the notes, I had listed, some were in my handwriting, some were in my other family members' handwriting, but there was a town listed, San Paolino or something like that, and Tufo, you know. So I went online, and sure enough, there's a Santa Paolino in Avellino, the province of Avellino, and there's also a Tufo. So I started to research family names in Santa Paolino, and I found that, yeah, there were Semenzas there. In fact, there was a Via Semenza, you know, which was pretty interesting. But I also found there were a lot of Sementas, S-E-M-E-N-T-A, okay? And then I looked at Tufo and some of the other surrounding towns, and there were a lot of Sementas, T-A rather than Z-A. And I figured, oh, wow, you know, I might have something here, you know? So so I kind of put that aside, and, you know, I was busy. I've had a number of careers. You know, I was a partner with a international accounting firm in New York City, KPMG, and then I retired early. I was a professor at Quinnipiac University for about 17 years. So, and the other thing was, my wife Marie had Parkinson's disease, so she suffered with that for about 25 years. So I had a lot on my plate, you know. And but anyway, I got back into this a couple of years ago, and my granddaughter, Megan Welch, agreed to help me. So we started to go online to try and see if we can find out more about the family. She joined Ancestry.com. And then the first thing we found out was, yeah, they did live in Tuckahoe. And they lived in a tenement. It's no longer there. I've tried to find it. But in 1905, and this is interesting, we found my grandfather living in Tuckahoe with his wife, 8 children. His mother, we think, might be his mother-in-law. His brother, Louis, Luigi. And there was, and I mentioned these handwritten notes, there was a Luigi mentioned. So it was his brother, there was a brother, Louis. And then there were 14 boarders listed as laborers. You know, we have no idea what that was all about. And also listed on that on the census was a 3-year-old young girl named Rosie. And that was really interesting. And then so I went back to the brown paper bag, and sure enough, there was a rose on there. And it sort of had been squeezed in between, sort of as an afterthought. And I asked family members, who's Rose? And, you know, we had an Aunt Rosie, you know, who was, we knew her, but no one knew anything about this Rose. So that was kind of interesting. And then my granddaughter Megan kept digging into it and was sitting there one day, and she suddenly looked at me and she says, I don't know if I should tell you this. And I said, well, you know, what is it? She found Rose. Okay, on a 1910 census taken at the Rome State Custodial Asylum in Oneida, New York, which really struck me hard when I heard that, you know. She was 8 years old. I still get emotional talking about it.
I can tell, yeah.
And then she later on we found that she passed away. I've never taken it beyond that because it's kind of too hard to take that. You know, I had a little aunt here who was in a asylum, you know, what was that all about? You know, I know times were a lot different then, but that was kind of hard to take. You know, in doing this research, you find out a lot, but you also find out things that you really hope you never knew about them, you know? So anyway, we went on. That was kind of interesting, you know, and then she found out something that really shocked me. She found out my father at the age of 10, okay, was put into a a reform school, I guess, the New York Catholic Protectory in New York City. I don't know if you know anything about that place.
No, never heard of that.
We've done a lot of research on it. It was in the Bronx. It was very, very, everything I read about it was very favorable. So it looked like it really was a wonderful place. But, you know, he was there and he spent, as far as we could tell, 5 years there, which is really sad.
Wow.
And the first year he was there, over that first Christmas, he was put into a hospital with tuberculosis. You know, never knew anything about this. Now, that's kind of interesting. Now, I know you're involved in a tenement museum in New York City, and you know that TB in tenements was pretty common, and that was the major, one of the major afflictions, and also that was also kind of sad. But it looked like he went on to spend about 5 years in that protectory, and he went home, I think, on one occasion, and then came back. Another couple of other family members, a Lennon, Jennifer Pajali, also were doing research, and they found out a lot about this institution. They also were able to find his card that they make out when they're an input card or something, you know, of their record while they're in the protectory and all. And he had very few visitors during that period, which is kind of sad. And she also found out something really interesting. Three of his brothers were also there for a brief time for petty larceny.
Wow.
So, you know, you just wonder, what was the environment like, you know, in that? It was just very sad. We also found out that one of his sisters, his older sister, Michelina, we think her name was, she ran away when she was 14 years old and married a so-called older man. And that aunt wound up in Brooklyn, which is another story I'll get into briefly. So that's where we kind of stood on that. And I guess I kind of put that aside for a while. And then, Len and Jennifer kept researching and I kept researching it. And then we found out that there was another relative that we found out in Brooklyn, actually out in Far Rockaway. And I always knew that we had relatives out in Brooklyn or Far Rockaway. I remember as a young boy going out, there was a bar we used to go to, and I remember eating pretzels. That was about it. But we did have relatives. So we found someone named Augustino or Augustini. Anyway, I went back to my handwritten notes, and it was an Augustini on that note right next to Luigi. So that had to be my uncle, you know, my grandfather's other brother-in-law. So that was interesting. And Michelina wound up living out in Brooklyn someplace, in Canarsie, I think. I never knew her. She must have died, you know, before I was born. But she had a daughter who we knew quite well. She used to come to New Rochelle a lot. And I don't know why I've never asked her about, you know, the family background and all. Now, that's something, you know, I really learned from this. And I tell people, look, ask questions while these people are alive. Once they're gone, they're gone. And write about it. Okay. Because, you know, I've listened to some of your podcasts where people have found recordings of their descendants. And that was just mind blowing to be able to hear, you know, one of your descendants talk and to read about it. So I always encourage people to write about it. So I call it the Brooklyn connection. That remains quite a mystery, okay? So one day my brother mentions to me, he goes, by the way, I've got daddy's birth certificate. I go, oh, wow, that's interesting, you know? He knew I was doing this research, and suddenly occurred to him he had the birth certificate. I said, boy, I want to see that, okay? And he gets the birth certificate, and he was baptized in a church out in Far Rockaway. Huh. You know, that's kind of true. Again, this Brooklyn Queens connection, you know, and we looked at it, and it looked like it was in script, unfortunately. And it looked like the name was not Semenza, but it was either Cemento or Cementa on the birth certificate. Okay. But, you know, as you know, the problem with these names, and I run into this all the time, is that, you know, our descendants, they were illiterate. Okay. So the only way that they would, you know, their names were written down, they couldn't write their names down. So they would have to say what their names were, and they spoke broken English. So we got all kinds of crazy spellings on these names. So it's pretty easy to see how these names got fouled up and all. So I actually tried to get in touch with that. I did get in touch with that church to set up an appointment for me and some of my family members to go back and look at the records to see if we could find, you know, more information on the name and also other family relatives. And they refused to grant me access.
Really?
I could not believe that. They said it was confidential information. I said, I'm his son. That's my father. I can't look at that. No. I haven't pursued that, but I intend to go further to see if I can get access to those records, because I think that would be pretty interesting.
Yeah, and you know, to that point, yeah. I contacted the church where when my mom and dad were married and asked them about the marriage certificate, and they said, "Sure, just give us the dates and send us a check, and we'll send you a copy."
Exactly. I just don't understand that.
That's crazy.
So, I don't know. I was talking to one of the women. I think I'm going to try and get in touch with the pastor and say, look, you know, this is my father. This is my family. You know, I'm not just someone, you know.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So anyway, that went on. And suddenly Jennifer Pacioli, she makes an absolutely amazing discovery. She dug in this and she finds out, she gets my grandfather's wedding certificate. Okay. And guess where he was living at the time? He was living on Mulberry Street in a tenement. I mean, that just blew my mind, right up the street from Ferrara's. So what my father had said all these years, that made sense. Okay, so he was born in Little Italy. And the name on the marriage certificate was Cementa, S-E-M-T-A.
Okay? Ah, right.
However, when somebody signed it, his X was next to it, it looks like it might be Cementi, so, T-I, so I don't know. But at the moment, I'm going with Cementa, you know. That's about all I could do. So, I mean, that was kind of it. You mentioned the blog, and what I did was, the other amazing thing about me, about this whole thing is, I mean, my father was the most calm, loving, sweet person you could ever imagine. And never did we have a hint that he had a background like that. And also my uncles, were wonderful people. When I told the family about this, they couldn't believe it. They just could not believe it. And, so that kind of, it's a dichotomy I can't figure out. The only thing I can figure out is, you know, because I know that he met my mom in the trolley, and she was a tough woman, my mother, but she was a very loving, caring woman and all. And the only thing I think of is somewhere along the line, she must have said to him, look, if you want to get married, you're going to have to straighten out and go the straight and narrow. That's the only thing I could figure out. It was her influence that turned his whole life around. She worked in a dress factory, right? I'll get into that. She worked right across the street from the where we lived in Herschel and all. So, I mean, that's about the only thing that I could figure out. But, you know, you mentioned the blog that I have. And I did a story which got very well received about my father called A Life Apart. And it was the dichotomy between the man that I knew, the father I knew, and the troubled, you know, childhood that he had. He also, you know, I was always amazed. He could do anything. He used to cut our hair, unfortunately. You know, he was a tailor. He's a butcher. He had a butcher shop. You know, he did a million things. Where'd you learn all this stuff, you know? And then I went back and looked at the protectory he was in, and they had to learn all these trades and all. So
right.
That's where he must have learned it.
Yeah, but it makes sense.
Why didn't he ever tell us? You know, why? I mean, he told no one knew about this. I had a large family, you know. Everyone says, why didn't anybody know about this? Why didn't anybody know about Rosie, you know? So, I don't know, that's strange.
Well, you know, I talked to a lot of people, and a lot of people say the same thing, you know, that that generation, you know, they didn't really talk a lot about it, especially from Italy. I was more close to my mom's family than my dad's, but my grandmother never talked about Italy, and me stupidly never thought to ask, you know. But I even asked my cousins who live with my older that lived or knew my dad's parents very well. And they never talked about Italy either.
We'll be right back.
Italian Roots and Genealogy is proudly sponsored by Your Dolce Vita and Dawn Matera, connecting people to their purpose in life and continuing their legacy. For more information, contact Dawn at www.yourdolcevita.com.
That's interesting. Yeah, I know. My wife's parents were both from Italy, Luigi and Pasqualina. They were from Benifrio, okay? And, you know, my mother-in-law never spoke English. We got along great because we never could speak to each other. Marie would say, yeah, but you should know what she's saying about you, you know? Anyway, but Luigi knew some English and all, but anytime I mentioned Italy, they supposedly had property over there. And I said, well, why don't we go back and look at the property? No, America, America. They wanted no part of Italy. You know? So life must have been tough over there. And I guess they just want to talk about their upbringing and all that, you know.
I know my uncle that was my cousin who taped my uncle. And they lived in Bari until 1949, and he wanted to make a trip back, not to stay, he just wanted to go visit. And my aunt had no part of going back. You know, they didn't have plumbing or any of that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
In 1949, they didn't have it.
Wow. Have you been back now? Have you been back today?
I've been back. We were there 25 years ago. We were supposed to go last year, and of course we couldn't go.
Yeah, obviously,
I'm still hoping maybe we could get there this year. I don't know. That's not looking great.
But
when I went back, I wasn't researching at the time, and I had no idea that when we were in Naples, that my grandmother's family, actually both my father's parents lived a half a mile from the train station in Naples. And I had no idea. We could have walked there. It was that close.
Wow.
Now, have you been back? Have you been back to any of the towns?
I've been to Italy many, many times.
Oh, great.
I ski a lot over in Italy. I've spent a lot of time in Italy, but never went to Avellino, you know. And the first time I took my wife to Italy, we went to Amalfi, which we loved.
Yeah.
And you're familiar with the Amalfi Coast.
We stayed in Sorrento.
And I made a mistake of renting a car, and you know those crazy roads and all. And I started driving up to Sorrento from Amalfi, and she started crying and all. So I had to turn the car in. So there was no way we were going to drive to the mountains of Avellino or Campo Bas. So, but I do intend. I don't know when though to hopefully go back. You know, I do have spent a lot of time in Italy. And some of the family members are interested in going back. And now that we got a better handle on the name, you know, maybe we'll do it. I don't know. It's down the road. So.
We had a whole trip planned with, her name's Letizia Sinisi. She runs Italy Rooting. And what she does is she actually gives you, you know, a made for you genealogy tour, if you will.
Really?
So yeah. We were going to go to my third great grandparents were the Duke and Duchess of Capricotta, and
wow,
their palace or their palazzo is the town hall now. So they were going to take us there. We were going to go to Avellino. We were going to go to Calabria, where there are still a couple of homes from the Piermallo family down there. And I was going to have lunch with 20 cousins and all of this stuff. And I was just, I mean, I don't get crushed easily, but I just been so crushed about this whole trip that we were planning for a year.
Oh,
and
wow.
A month before we go, everything's locked down, you know. But the good part about it is since then, I've met so many great people in Italy that I never would have met if had I not been doing this. And,
sure, this is great.
You know, Gianluca in Calabria says, when you come to Calabria, I'm going to take you to the Pier Mallo homes. And I met Francesco in Sicily, who told me, I'm going to take you, my wife's mother is from Sciacca, I'm going to take you there, and we're going to show you this, and I'll, you know, do all these things. So maybe it was a blessing in disguise that this got postponed. I don't know. But I do want to ask you about growing up as an Italian American in the, I guess, in the, you know, 40s and 50s, and you know, fascinating about the nicknames. I understand your nickname was Chesty. So I'd like to know about that.
I still get called Chesty by some of the ones who are still alive in the old neighborhood. But you know, I had just an amazing childhood, and I always wanted to write about it, but you know, I got so busy in the business world, and then when I could have went into semi-retirement, I called going from the business world on Wall Street to college professor is like semi-retirement. So I started writing the book, and it took me a long time to write it. And I was amazed at the memories I had and all. And finally in 2007, I published the book. But let me start. I was brought up in the West, okay? Up the West. West New Rochelle, New York. 45 minutes from Broadway. You know, George M. Cohen?
Yes.
That's all about West New Rochelle, okay? It was a very unique neighborhood. It was a very small neighborhood. Mainly Italians, and some people get offended by this, but we called them colored people back in those days. You know, we didn't call them blacks or African. They were colored people, you know, and that's what they were. We had a lot of colors and, you know, Italians, but mainly Italians and all. And so I always wanted to write about that. And it was a very unique neighborhood, and I'm sure you've heard this from a number of people. It was a very close-knit neighborhood. We were surrounded by family and friends and, you know, never a dull moment. But I thought it was just great. And I called the book The Last Best of All Times, because that's what I think they were. I don't think we'll, unfortunately, ever have a period like that again, you know. And when I talk to people about the book and all, and tell them, you know, I wanted to preserve the memories, and people I talk about will say, well, yeah, you know, that's great, you know, because we talk to our descendants, our children and grandchildren about it, and they have no idea, you know, what life was back. And so I wanted to preserve those memories so that, you know, we have them, you know, continuing on. So that's why I wanted to write the book, to mainly preserve the memories and all. And, you know, when I wrote it, and I had a book signing at the Boys Club, and that was a big thing in our lives in West New Rochelle, which was very well attended. I've had another book sign. It was a self-published book. I've had a number of book signings. And a couple of years ago, I went back to the St. Anthony's Feast back in West New Rochelle. And that was really interesting, and sold a lot of books. And, you know, so the book has been very well received. But let me tell you a little bit about the book and all. We lived in a two-family house, okay? 228 Union Avenue, all right? We lived in a house with my aunt and uncle, and it was my brother and I, my brother Charlie and I, and then our two cousins downstairs. But our fathers were brothers, and our sisters, and our mothers, I got that screwed up, our mothers were sisters.
Oh, wow.
So two brothers married two sisters. Yeah. And we lived in one house. So we were like, we always called ourselves blood brothers, because we were more than just cousins. You know, yes. We really were a lot closer than that. In fact, a lot of people would always, couldn't tell us apart, especially my cousin Ronnie and myself. And, you know, I'd walk down the street and I'd say, are you Bobby or Ronnie? You know, I'm Bobby. Oh, is your mother the tall one or the short one? You know, so that's what they would say and all. But so we lived there, and it's interesting because my mother's family, they were Cadellas. They came over, and they actually bought property on Union Avenue. They had the house where we lived, and then next door they had a grocery store. Which I think they ran at one time, and there was a hall above it which they would have festivities and all. But they lost that, the grocery store during the Depression, I think. So we had the one house, but, you know, we lived in a top floor. My aunt and uncle lived in a bottom floor, but the bottom floor was bigger and old than the top floor. But I think it was because my uncle, who lived downstairs, had emphysema, so he couldn't make the stairs. So I think that's why we lived in the top floor. But it was just wonderful. We had cousins all around the corner, you know. Food was a big thing in our lives. I mean, we lived in a block between 2nd and 3rd Street. I mean, there were two grocery stores. There was a chicken market across the street. We used to go get live chickens. I mean, that's a book in itself. We had a fish market on the corner. Okay. We had, a tailor. We had everything. It was like our own little world right there. Pizzerias around the corner. Three bakeries.
Right. Yeah.
And it was nothing like sitting on those steps on a summer's evening and smelling the bread. Oh, my God. And then going down and getting hot bread, right? Loading it with butter, you know, or having my mom make pizza frites or something like that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I don't have to tell you this, but food was a big, big thing, you know. And Sundays and holidays were just unbelievable. And that's why it was called Chesty. It was a lot of food to eat, you know. And the only thing I would not eat was fish. Okay, my mom.
I don't like fish either.
But on Fridays, as you know, have to eat fish. Okay, so I would eat macaroni with ricotta, pacci, or peppers and eggs, and that was all I ate as a kid. Now, all I eat is fish. I mean, I love fish. I'll eat any kind of fish. You know, my mother's rolling over in her grave, but she used to say this and all. So, Sundays and holidays, I mean, it's funny, back in those days, we'd always seem to have the big feast down in Aunt Gertie, my aunt's kitchen on the first floor. And my mother and my aunt, they wouldn't even sit down. I mean, they were just there serving all the men, you know. I mean,
that's right.
Yeah. Probably people get annoyed when I say this, but that's the way it was in those days, you know. And we would start at, lunchtime, and we'd never get off the table. I mean, we would just go from lunch into God knows what, into dinner, you know, just eat all day, you know. So it's phenomenal.
I fry eggplant now with the air conditioner going on, and I'm thinking of my aunts in the tiny little kitchen. The house was filled, the tiny little kitchen, frying eggplant when it's 90 degrees outside, like it's nothing, you know?
Right, exactly. And we don't have air conditioning, of course, no way, you know?
No, and my mom comes from a family of nine.
Wow.
So we would, you know, my grandmother's birthday was in the summer. Luckily, we'd be outside and everything. But to your point, I mean, there was endless food. And I grew up in College Point, which wasn't really an Italian neighborhood, but my mom's family was, and my dad's family, they were both from Corona. So to your point, you know, the bakeries and the sausage places and everything was, you know.
Corona. Yeah.
And everybody, I mean, you know, in 1950s, 1960s, everybody was Italian. I mean, the whole block. You know, the old lady with the black dresses and all of that kind of stuff.
Oh yeah, perennial. I call them perennial mourning for their husbands. You know, they were always in black. Yeah.
And I write about that.
That's in the book, of course. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, my dad's mom, she wore black. I never saw her in anything but black. My grandfather died when I was 2 months old in 1951. Yeah. And my grandmother wore black till the day she died. My mom's mom wore black for 3 days. Then she was back to the print Vestalia, and the Italian ladies were crazy over, you know, our friends were like, how could you do it? And she said, you know, what am I going to do? You know, I'm comfortable or whatever. So, you know, two completely different, you know, personalities, but we had the same meal. We would start, you know, Thanksgiving or Christmas or Easter would start at, you know, 1 o'clock, go at 6 o'clock till 6 o'clock, you know, till you had dessert. About a half hour later, my aunt would be asking us, you want a turkey sandwich? Let me ask you, you had non-Italian friends, I'm sure. Did you have to try to tell them, don't eat so much on this course?
No, I did not have any non-Italian friends.
Really?
I did not know what a Protestant was. I went to 6 years of Catholic school. I don't think I met a Protestant until I was. You were either Italian or American, okay? And the Americans were Metagons, you know. Yeah. And the only Metagons I knew were, you know, a few Jewish people or a few Irish people, but no, I didn't have any non-Italian friends. Other than the color guys, you know, and they, you know, that was it. So.
Yeah, well, we used to go to the beach, and we go to the beach with eggplant parmesan, sausage and peppers. and you look at the, you know, the Americans over at the next blanket, they had tuna fish and peanut butter and jelly.
Well, no, I'll tell you what we had, though. We had two schools. We had St. Joseph, the Catholic school, which I went, of course, and Columbus School across the street. Okay. So sometimes we would go to Columbus School for some reason in the cafeteria. We didn't have a cafeteria in St. Joseph's. But they used to serve chipped beef on toast and those American dishes. And what's this stuff, you know? So that was about my only exposure to non-Italian food, you know, until later in life. Let me ask you, what about the malarkey? You know about the, did you have the malarkey in your neighborhood?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I read about that. That was, we had the... when you were overlooked and you had to go to the malarkey lady for the cure, you know, and it always worked, you know. Home remedies were a big thing in my family, okay? And I think that's the reason why I very seldom missed school, because I don't want to make believe I was sick, because, you know,
the remedy was worse than the disease in school,
you know, enemas or somebody used to have this thing look like a weapon, a throat swab. You know, if you had a sore throat, oh my God.
I never heard of that. No, I missed that one.
With Argyrol. You ever heard of Argyrol? Or if you were really bad, iodine.
Really?
Oh, man. Home remedies were... So I would always.
The enemas I know because my aunt Dolly, she was the queen of the enemas. Anything that you had, she was giving you an enema. And you know, of course, when you were sick, you had the, you know, pastina and all of that kind of stuff.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And Coca-Cola syrup was a big thing. If you had a sore throat. Yeah. See that was, and I'm a little bit later than you, so maybe that we, you know, we went from iodine to Coca-Cola syrup.
I never heard that. We had something called Amal, which I don't think nobody mentions to me. My father never really took care of the yard and all. It was, you know, weeds in the back. So they used to go in the back and get this weed or something and then boil it, you know, and it was just so soothing and so delicious. Amal. It must have been a dose, probably marijuana or something. I don't know. that I really enjoyed. Amal was good. So offset the iodine, the throat swabbers, oh, they were nasty little instruments.
And you know, Biaski, of course, which I don't see Biaski. That anymore.
I got it right there in my cabinet. Oh yeah,
I can't find it.
Biaski, of course. Oh, go to Arthur Avenue.
We'll be right back.
Are you a fan of global travel? Are you wanting to see more of the world yourself? Well, then you're my kind of people. My name is DeAndre Koch, and I'm the host of the travel podcast, Revolutionizing Your Journey, where we share stories of everyday people making the most of global travel and also teach you how to do the same yourself. You'll hear stories from people just like you who learned how to travel for nearly free, like Jo, who realized she could take her daughter to Disneyland in Tokyo for cheaper than in the US, or Rob, who flew his entire family of seven to Europe round trip in business class, all for less than the price of economy. Check out the link in the description for the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast to learn how to elevate your own travels.
Yeah, I guess that's where you have to go. You have to go to.
Oh, no doubt about it. Yeah, I used to be in Arthur Avenue all the time. So I'm going to go back there, and I think next week, because I think it's open again. But this has been terrible. The other thing in the neighborhood was street games, which I'm sure you had. I mean, we were never inside. Yeah, you know, we were outside from morning till night. You know, we were always unsupervised. You know, there was no little league or anything like that. You know, we did have the boys club league. The boys club was a big thing in our lives, and they had organized activities and all. But most of the games we made up were games we played in the street. We didn't have a lot of money. I thought we were rich, but you know, we really didn't have a lot of money. So we'd play football with, you know, a milk carton filled with paper and would play box ball. And so when, you know, in the business world, I meet a lot of people. And if they were, especially if they were Italian, I'd always talk to them about, you know, growing up and all. And everyone was always the same. I mean, they all came from, you know, similar backgrounds. They didn't have a lot of money, but they were happy, you know, and they just loved their childhood. And they always talked about their games that they played, you know, stickball and all these games and all. But I never found anyone who played a unique game that I invented called clothespins. We had a clothespin league because we, our streets, there were too many cars and all. So we used to, we never played stickball. We used to play with clothespins in my backyard. And you know, I had a regular league. You know, I was a big Brooklyn, I was a Brooklyn Dodger fan, which is another story because I was the only Brooklyn Dodger fan in West New Rochelle. And that was the golden age of baseball. You know, you had the Dodgers, the Giants, and the Yanks. And I'd argue, then, because every year my team would lose, you know, and I'd have to take all this abuse. But so I love baseball. So I organized this league. It was back before you had the reserve clause and all that. So everybody had to sign contracts. They were spring training. There were tryouts. I still got the records. I kept the records from all the pitching records, the hitting records. So I never found anyone ever played clothespin baseball. So it's lucky we didn't get our eyes poked out, you know, playing with the clothespins. So we had a lot of clubs, you know, Crusaders, Cowboys and Indians. Movies were a big thing. We used to, we used to sneak into the movies a lot. We had some unique ways of sneaking into different movies, which I write about and all. Basically, we lived, as I found out later, in a sheltered life, you know, and you see everything that was going around us. But, you know, it was the last pest of all times in my mind, you know.
I agree. And for anybody who wants to, I'll put the link out there, but for anybody who wants to, you know, find the website or find the book, where would they go?
Yeah, it's on Amazon. So they can just go, you can type in my name or type in Les Best of All Times. It's on Amazon. What I did was working with mainly my grandson, Robert Scala, who set up the website for me. You know, these young people are amazing and all. But we got together with another cousin who's an Emmy Award winner, producer and editor. He's won multiple Emmy Awards, and some other family members who have theatrical experience and been writing a screenplay. I mean, I've been doing most of the writing and I've been doing the criticizing and the trying again. Because I wanted to do something like The Wonder Years. I don't know if you remember The Wonder Years. It's probably more have the narrator who's looking back on his life. And I just thought with all the divisiveness that's going on in the country now and everything, you know, it'd be great to have a show which talks about those times and talks about the family and all. So I spent a lot of time, you know, working on a screenplay. And, you know, we've tried to make, we've made efforts to try and pitch the show and talk to some people and all, but then the virus hit and all that sort of stopped, you know. But what I decided to do is because I love to write. I mean, with all this time I have now, you know, it's a good way for me to spend time. So what I decided to do was to write it as a novel, which is not easy to do. So I'm writing a novel now, and then hopefully down the road someplace, I hope to turn it into a screenplay and maybe get a break somewhere like Jazz Balamaturi got, you know, with The Bronx Tale and, maybe get it as a series or something. I don't know. It's a dream, impossible dream, I call it.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm working on something myself, and I know it's hard. But one other thing that we have in common is, as I know you wrote a beautiful song about your wife. I've written two songs for my wife.
Really?
Not quite as operatic as yours. One is kind of a rock ballad, and the other one is she kept telling me, because I was in a band, that she kept telling me, why are you always writing songs about boobs and beer? So the second song I wrote about boobs and beer.
Can you send those to me?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'll send them to you. Yeah,
I'd love to listen to them. Oh, that was quite a story. And as I said, you know, my wife suffered many, many years. And by the way, as I think I mentioned, I did write a book. I started keeping a diary when she got sick and all. And I did it for a couple of reasons. I did it mainly to kind of just sit down at the end of the night and collect my thoughts and write down what happened and then try and plan, you know, what to do for the future and all. But so I had a lot of copious notes. And so when I wrote the book about her, you know, it was I had a lot to go on. And incidentally, I had a quote that I responded to something in the New York Times and it got published. And I talked about kind of the positive side of caregiving, which is kind of, you know, how can caregiving be positive? But, you know, I pointed out the things you got to do to keep positive and to maintain your life and all that. And some young journalists on the West Coast found this and hunted me down. She actually found me, got my phone number through a sailing club I belonged to. And she's writing a book on caregiving, on the quote positive side of caregiving. Mm-hmm. So she's read my book, which she really loved and all. And I'm working with her now on the book. Basically, she's going to include a section on the book about me. But the song was interesting because my wife spent a number of months in a hospital, and I didn't think she was going to survive. So, you know, I wanted to let her know how I felt, you know, that I'd always be there for her. So the song was called Near to You, and that's how I got to write the book. Again, I'm terribly musician. I've still got my keyboard. I'm terrible, but I love it, you know? So I learned a lot about music, composition, and so that's how I got that.
Yeah, well, I'm a horrible guitar player, but I had a good friend that helped me. Yeah, I have my good friend Brian. We wrote songs together again, and I will come up with the idea and usually the lyrics. And mm-hmm. I would say, Brian, I think this should be a rockabilly song. And he'd say, okay, and the next day, he'd have the whole thing worked out with a lead and everything like that. So yeah, I'll definitely send you some of that.
Yeah, no, I definitely want to hear that. Now you're living out in Jersey someplace, right?
I'm in Bradley Beach, New Jersey. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Now you're involved in the Tenney Museum, I think, or in the city.
I've interviewed Dr. Schelsa, who's the president or curator of the Italian American Museum. It was in an old bank.
Ah, okay, yeah.
And they're building a, you know, their own building.
Oh, right, yeah. I did go online and check that out, right, yeah, okay.
And it's supposed to be Columbus Day this year. It's supposed to reopen.
Really?
And yeah. So
I had an Uncle Columbus, by the way. The story, Uncle Bumbo, you talk about characters, you know, but the story goes, he was named Columbus because his father lost a bet. Had a name of Columbus. But he was a character, Uncle Bumbo. He was something else. Well, maybe we can get together in the city someday and, you know, when things settle down. I'm in a city. I used to be in a city a lot.
Absolutely.
I bike all over the city. I bike probably every neighborhood in New York City. I love to be there.
Oh, yeah. No, sure. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm almost at the end of my 2 days. 2 weeks, I mean. So
okay, yeah, I'm well beyond that. So that's good. Yeah,
yeah. It was tough tracking it down here, and my wife is she got her second shot yesterday. So
yeah,
so we're getting there. So well, this has been absolutely fascinating. A lot of fun. I can't tell you how much fun I had.
I've enjoyed it. I was apprehensive about this, but I really enjoyed it.
No, I think we could have done 4 hours on it. but thanks again, and
thank you. I really appreciate it. All right,
take care.
Buongiorno.
Buongiorno. Yeah.